water tanks. I mean, some cold water tanks I've been seeing recently on Instagram are pretty cool. You get some in like the Northern California area, and even up in the East Coast, like Maine and some of the other northern states here in the United States. Just seeing some people set up tanks with some of the stuff that's local to those waters. It's pretty crazy to see all the cool like anemones and macroalgae that they get up there. I always thought like, you know, the further north you go, the more ugly things get, but that's not the case.
What's up, reef fanatics? Welcome back to another Coral Reef Talk podcast. And Levi, today we have an exciting one. How are you doing today, Levi?
Doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I'm excited about this episode because today we are talking about different kinds of aquariums that you can have in the saltwater hobby. It's not just those amazing looking SPS coral tanks that you see all the time. There's so many different kinds of habitats that you can create, different kinds of aquariums that you can have within the saltwater hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a few, and each little avenue has its own little different things that kind of go along with, you know, each of the tanks. There's quite a few different ways you can go in this hobby. Each tank style has its own ups and downs, so a lot of different avenues to go.
Yeah, so with this hobby being so diverse, we thought it would be a good idea and jump into some of the tanks that you could have, starting with a fish-only tank with live rock. What are your thoughts about those as far as, like, how easy are they to get into and just the different kind? Even with fish-only tank, you can have predator tanks, you can have a community tank. So let's dive a little bit into those.
Yeah, so fish-only tanks, I mean, pretty much it's just stating that, you know, you just keep fishing it. And that also makes it easier to treat certain fish and also feed certain fish. So some fish are coralvores, like they'll eat corals, or they're super aggressive and you can't really keep them in a reef tank. So you go to the alternate avenue and keep a fish-only tank, which... I enjoy fish only tanks. I think they're pretty cool, but I also love, you know, the natural look of all the corals and stuff in the tank. But in this hobby, it's really challenging to achieve both avenues. So fish only tanks are definitely a good way to go if you're looking for some fish that may nip at corals or are somewhat aggressive, like even your bigger angels, your puffer fish, snappers, groupers, all that sort of stuff. Usually gravitate more towards a fish-only tank. Butterflies, too. I mean, there's just a lot of different crazy things.
But yeah, like you said, fish-only tanks are easier to care for because you're just dealing with the fish. I mean, you can treat that tank with copper and medication. Yeah. And you don't worry about delicate, like, corals or anything dying because you just have fish. And you can treat marine ick or you can treat whatever... maybe going on flukes, whatever is happening, you can treat that. And if you want the look of corals and keep more aggressive fish or fish that nip at corals, you can always add artificial inserts or fake corals.
Yeah.
So that's
one way. I've seen people do like in predator tanks or in just regular, like, you know, what would normally be a fish only tank, you know, they throw like some zinnias or some anthillias or leathers in there, you know, just to build up and fill out the tank with some corals. Now, I mean, that's an avenue people take too. But the good part about having just fish only, like you mentioned, you can treat with some of the heavier treatments that you would not be able to use in an actual reef tank. So that could be quite beneficial to more finicky fish that might be more susceptible to certain diseases, because you can pretty much eradicate that with high doses of copper and other different type of antibiotics and such.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the second tank that we want to kind of touch on, and it's usually the tank that is recommended to people that want to get into corals, is usually going to be a soft coral tank, because soft corals are usually a little bit easier to take care of because they're more forgiving with water parameters. So you can typically learn how your parameters react and how your tank is reacting to corals. Then you can learn all that easier with soft corals. What do you think about that?
Yeah, soft coral tanks are actually one of my personal favorites. I like a lot of different species of soft coral, and they're quite easy to keep and they're gorgeous. You know, there's a lot of movement with soft corals. And I think even a lot of like experienced reefers really still enjoy like the movement that soft corals give. So yeah, a lot of people do soft coral tanks and they're really easy to maintain. But I've always been a big guy on water changes, you know, do water changes when you can. I try to do them every Friday just, you know, to keep that water clarity clear, like no matter what, keep all those parameters stable. But yeah, soft coral tanks can be really rewarding and quite forgiving. So it's definitely a good step if you're just getting into the hobby.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really cool soft corals out there, like green star polyps, Leather corals, zinnia is really cool, even though a lot of people don't like zinnia because it grows really fast like a weed. But just the movement of that coral to me is really cool. And it just depends on what you're trying to do, right? So if you like that, then go ahead and put it in your tank. Give it a try, see what it does. But next up from there, what would you say would be like the next type of aquarium that you could have or get into?
I'd probably say like an LPS dominant reef, you know, some of your acans, your favias, bubble corals, and that's going to include your, you know, like your torches, hammers, frog spawn, octospawn, all that sort of good stuff. You can, a lot of the times, if you, especially if you're looking for like more like vibrant fluorescent color, or like under your blue light specifically, the LPS is where you're going to really start to see some really unique colors kind of trickle out through favias and chalices and all your torches and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I like brain corals too. Some of my favorites, trachophilias, whelses are really cool. But yeah, it just gives you a whole nother level of dynamic, like you said, with your blue lights and everything, the way they fluoresce in the water. You see it even more with LPS corals, because like Duncan corals are really cool to feed and watch the feeding response.
Yeah.
Gullies are really cool. But yeah, an LPS tank, yeah, I agree. That would be like the next level up. And then from there, you can start kind of, I guess, mixing everything together. Now, we haven't touched on SPS corals yet, but we will. But mixed corals, you can do a mixed coral reef. And that tends to be one of the popular things in the hobby, is everyone kind of picks and chooses what they want and just meshes it all together. And you can get some really cool looking tanks that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that can definitely, you know, it's fun to do, but it can definitely add some more challenges, because different corals and different types of corals require different like parameters, and they enjoy different parameters. Like most soft corals tend to enjoy a little higher nutrients. And once you start to trickle into some of the SPS and even the LPS, some of them enjoy some lower nutrients. So you just kind of watch and get a balance that everything can tolerate.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's when you start running into trouble, where you put an SPS coral in there and it just starts to bleach out or something, or just not do well. And you're like, well, what's going on? Well, different corals have different needs. And like you said, soft corals may like the water a little more dirty, like a little more nutrients. But yeah, so you got soft coral tanks, you got LPS, large polyp stony coral tanks, you have mixed reef tanks, which encompasses everything, including this next tank, which is SPS corals or small polyp stony corals. And these are the reef tanks that you see that are just full of color, full of branches, looks like sticks and little trees hanging out in the reef aquarium. And there's some absolutely stunning SPS tanks out there.
Yes, there definitely is. SPS is one of my favorite like groups of corals. I don't really deal much with them, just simply because I'm busy. I got a lot of things going on, and I don't feel like I can give them the proper care that they really require and need. But yeah, they're some of the tanks that I've seen people like on Instagram and stuff like have it. I mean, it's amazing to see that. They're so gorgeous, and they just have a unique growth pattern. Each and every individual species grows a little differently. So it's really cool to see all that and see them all intertwine in all the different colors, and even some grafting and stuff now. I mean, it's pretty cool to see all that.
Yeah, for sure. And like SPS coral, like you said, they need a little bit lower nutrients, right? They need actually like a super stable environment. With any reef tank, you want to keep it stable. But an SPS tank, you want to be on top of your parameters and making sure you're really dialing that in. And so I feel like you can kind of see the progression, right, of some of these tanks, at least how we've started this podcast by talking about fish only, then going to soft coral to LPS. It's kind of a progression in the hobby. And that's usually, I guess, maybe one of the addictions of the hobby, right? You start adding some corals, and then next thing you know, you got the hard corals, and then you have the SPS corals, and then you're just in it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But there's a lot more that you can do. You can also keep more challenging species like seahorses. You can keep, like, there's the flamboyant cuttlefish out there.
Yeah.
Which is, I hear that's pretty challenging to keep the cuttlefish, but that's another type of tank. Levi, do you know about our sponsor, Printed Reef?
Yes, I do.
Printed Reef makes incredible 3D printed products out of 100% reef safe PETG plastic, like this right here. This is a bristle worm trap. You can put that in there to help attract bristle worms to it. You can get those things out of your tank if you want to, or if you have some scolemia, some scullies, you got a scully stand right here. Awesome. They just make awesome, unique products. I mean, what do you think about Printed Reef?
Yeah, Printed Reef is pretty amazing. I got a couple other products I use, especially like for like the Gorgonians. Like I like to, you know, stick them in the sand or mount them on rocks. But they have certain mounts, you know, where you can just mount it to it, and it helps hold it up in the sand. And I mean, I love them. They have a lot of different products too, and they're amazing.
Yeah, so head on over to printedreef.com, and if you're a subscriber to the Coral Reef Talk, you can save 10% at printedreef.com/thecoralreeftalk. Just use the code thecoralreeftalk at checkout. What else is there? There's also like the oddball reefer stuff that you got going on.
Right behind me.
Yeah.
NPS. So NPS tanks is non-photosynthetic, which means the corals don't require light. Not necessarily meaning that specific organism doesn't use light to grow. Uses nutrients and food that it feeds off of in the water column to turn into energy to grow. They do still absorb like your calcium, and you got to watch your alkalinity, your pH, and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah. Definitely a totally different avenue to whatever other tanks there is. It's kind of its own unique niche. And you definitely got to have some passion for it. Otherwise, you're going to just kind of get burnt out. I've been close to getting burnt out with NPS because it's just a lot of work. But it's something I really am passionate for and really enjoy. So I'm excited to keep building up this tank and growing it out and seeing how it does. It's doing great right now. So
really? So you've been almost burnt out by NPS? Just because of all the work and stuff?
It's a lot of work. Yeah, and it's stressful. And you, like, if you don't keep up with your water changes with the non-photosynthetic system, you're going to run into problems relatively quick. So it's just, it's consistency. And just
how do you think that compares to, like, an SPS tank? Or, like, it's two different animals, right? So you got to keep up on water changes. You're constantly feeding. But, like, SPS coral, maybe they're keeping up on their dosing schedule and stuff. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with NPS specifically, you're going to want to keep up with your feeding. Like, that's one of the most important things. And then obviously, even your dosing, like keeping your calcium and alkalinity as stable as you possibly can. I've noticed them to be a little more flexible with that, like compared to like some SPS corals. But yeah, in my experience, water changes and feeding, just keeping the tank nutrients as low as you can. It's definitely challenging. It's almost impossible to keep it at zero. I've seen some people do it, but they got like algae scrubbers, skimmers, and a bunch of other things going on in the reef. But if you keep up with your water changes and feed your tank pretty heavily, you should do all right. Yeah. And certain species are definitely a lot easier than others. So
very cool. And so from non-photosynthetic corals, the next one we wanted to bring up, which is probably even more of a niche aquarium to have in the saltwater hobby, would be like the macroalgae tanks.
So, macroalgae are really cool.
I mean, you got like, I'm not an expert on all the different type of macroalgae, but I know you got like the dragon's breath and stuff, like the really cool colors that you can put out there. And what is it, Tiger Boy, is it on Instagram?
Tiger Boy,
he's got amazing macroalgae tanks.
It's insane. I don't even know how many tanks he has now. He probably has more than me, and they're just stuffed and loaded of gorgeous macroalgae, and there's tons of different species. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. And so don't you have, you have a macroalgae tank going on as well?
I do.
So what are you keeping in there with the macroalgae? What does that kind of look like?
So the tank itself is about 3 gallons. I got a couple different gobies in there. I got like the redhead gobies, or not redheads. Man, I can't think of it. White banded gobies or something. They're from the Caribbean. And I got like a little neon goby. It's like a Zanzibar coral band. It's like white with a gold head. It's pretty cool. And then some like smaller pistol shrimps and stuff. Just some random things that have maybe hitchhiked on some of the algaes on rock that I put in the tank. But yeah, just a random assortment of different smaller organisms that can live and then thrive in the 3 gallon.
Nice. And yeah, I think it's really fascinating the different types of tanks that you can keep in this hobby. I mean, if you go to any public aquarium, if you have the chance to, you see all these different exhibits that they have, and it's really cool. I was at the Florida Aquarium a few weeks ago just walking through, and I saw just like their mixed reef aquarium, and I saw like different, like a yellow tang, a blue tang in there, and I'm like, how cool is that, that we're actually able to keep those fish in our aquariums at home? And like we talked about with Salem, a lot of people don't even get to experience like going to or seeing these animals in person or up close in the wild, but you get to experience them in this hobby, things that you see at the public aquarium. So It's just really fascinating to me, all the different ways you can kind of venture off in this hobby.
Absolutely. I agree.
And then on top of like macroalgae tanks, non-photosynthetic tanks, you can even do the cold water tanks or the deep water tanks as well, which is what you have going on.
Yeah. Cold water tanks and deep water tanks. Yeah. I mean, some cold water tanks I've been seeing recently on Instagram are pretty cool. You get some in like the Northern California area and even up in the East Coast, like Maine and some of the other northern states here in the United States. Just seeing some people set up tanks with some of the stuff that's local to those waters. It's pretty crazy to see all the cool like anemones and macroalgae that they get up there, and even the different kinds of fish. I always thought, like, you know, the further north you go, the more ugly things get. But that's not the case at all. Some of the things I've been seeing are pretty crazy. But then you can do like the deep water part of it too, where you get into like water that's quite deep, like 200 feet or so, where the water temp's about 65 degrees. And that's definitely hard to achieve without a chiller. You're definitely going to want a chiller if you're going to run a deep water tank, because a lot of the species that come from there aren't going to be able to tolerate higher temperatures. So yeah, just keep that in mind. Chillers are expensive, but if you're wanting to go for a deep water tank, you're definitely going to have to invest in one of those.
Yeah, for sure. And I've always kind of wanted to keep like a scorpion fish or like a rhino fish or something. Those are pretty unique fish.
Definitely.
Yeah. So all kinds of things that you can keep in this hobby. We just wanted to do like a quick run through, a quick podcast episode, and talk about a few of the different tanks, 7 or more that we covered in this episode, just to kind of give you an idea of what you can keep in this hobby, especially if you're brand new and you're kind of looking for your first tank. Where do you want to jump in at? Do you want to jump in with corals? Do you want to jump in with just fish? Or maybe you want to go even more niche or exotic and jump into non-photosynthetic corals. I mean, it's almost endless what you can do with this hobby, at least what you can find out there to get from these local fish stores in your area, and even online, things that you can find and buy and set up an aquarium around. So yeah, we just wanted to give you some ideas. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, be sure to hit the like button, comment down below what's your favorite type of aquarium in the saltwater reefing hobby. And if you're not subscribed already, go ahead and click the subscribe button wherever you watch or listen to the Coral Reef Talk podcast. And we'll catch you next time in the next episode. See ya.
See ya.